Welcome back, everybody, for another deep dive. And today we are going to be looking at the book of Proverbs.
Proverbs.
But we're not looking at it for the classic wise sayings that we normally hear from it. We're going a little bit deeper and looking at how wisdom is personified as a woman in these ancient texts.
Yeah.
And trust me, this is going to change everything.
It really does.
Oh.
And you know what makes this deep dive even more exciting is that it connects these ancient ideas to a modern revolution in how we understand the mind.
Ooh, okay.
It's called the embodiment revolution,
Okay.
and it has huge implications for interpreting Proverbs.
Wow, okay. I am very intrigued. So our source material for today's deep dive is a lecture by Dr. Nutheim, and he dives right into this whole embodiment revolution
He
thing.
does.
So what exactly is it, and
Right.
why does it matter for a book that was written thousands of years ago?
Well, for centuries, we thought of the mind as the separate entity, all logic and abstract reasoning completely detached from our bodies. But what the embodiment revolution reveals is that our physical experiences, how we move our senses, even our emotions, they actually shape how we think and use language.
So it's not just that our brains are in our bodies, it's that our bodies influence our very thoughts.
Exactly. And
Meta.
this is where metaphors come in.
Yep.
Two cognitive scientists, Lakoff and Johnson,
Okay.
really revolutionized the field by showing that metaphors aren't just poetic devices, they're fundamental to how we understand the world. For example, we often talk about arguments as war, right?
Yeah.
We say things like, I won that debate, or he shot down my idea.
Yeah, you're right. I use those phrases all the time.
And that's because our physical experience of conflict, feeling defensive, raising our voices, even feeling physically threatened,
Right.
shapes how we conceptualize arguments.
Okay.
So applying this to Proverbs, when wisdom is personified as a woman,
Right.
it's not just a literary flourish, it's tapping into this deep connection between our physical experiences and how we understand abstract concepts.
Fascinating. So Dr. Heim spends a good amount of time explaining how this new understanding of metaphors changes how we read Proverbs. I remember when I first read this, I thought wisdom as a woman was just kind of like a poetic image.
Yeah.
But now it feels much more significant.
Absolutely. And if
And
you look closely at chapters 1, 8, and 9 of Proverbs, where this personified wisdom really comes to life,
okay.
you'll notice she's far from a passive figure.
Right.
She's described as having a spirit. She lectures. She gets scorned. She even laughs.
Yes.
This makes the pursuit of wisdom so much more intense and emotional.
Yes.
Yes.
There's one part in there where she's portrayed as this woman with attitude, you know?
Yeah.
And she's kind of warning people about ignoring her. And it's not just like, hey, wisdom is good for you. It's
Yeah.
more like, listen up or you'll regret it.
Right. You can almost feel her frustration, like she genuinely cares whether people listen to her.
Yeah.
And that adds a whole new layer of meaning to those wise
It
sayings.
does. It's making me think about the times I've ignored good advice and the consequences were real. So if wisdom is this powerful,
Right.
like almost a force of nature, how do we even approach it? Is it something that we just kind of stumble upon, or is there more to it?
That's a great question. And this brings us to Proverbs 4.5 to 9, where the idea of a romance with wisdom comes into play.
Oh, a romance.
The Hebrew verb used for acquire in relation to wisdom is interesting
Okay.
because it can also refer to starting a marriage.
Oh, wow. So it's not just about passively gaining wisdom, it's like actively pursuing a relationship. So it's
Exactly.
not like wisdom is just going to like fall in our laps.
Right.
It takes real effort,
It
like
does.
courting someone you deeply admire.
Precisely. It's a pursuit, a journey that requires dedication. And this idea of actively seeking wisdom comes up again and again in Proverbs, like
Right.
in Proverbs 2.13, where it talks about crying out for insight and raising your voice for understanding.
Yeah, it's like you're desperately searching for something that you can't live without, almost like a lost love.
Right.
And then it compares seeking wisdom to like searching for silver or hidden treasure.
That's right. It's this incredible treasure hunt where the reward is more valuable than anything you can imagine. And this passage also makes a powerful connection between wisdom and God.
Okay.
It says that the Lord gives wisdom. From his mouth come knowledge and understanding. So ultimately, this passionate pursuit of wisdom leads you to a deeper relationship with God himself.
Oh, that's beautiful. It's like wisdom is a bridge connecting us to the divine. And speaking of beautiful imagery, I love how Proverbs 3.13:20 describes wisdom as a woman with hands and feet, granting long life, wealth, honor, and peace to those who embrace her.
It's such a vivid picture, and notice how it's not just about material possessions.
Right.
Wisdom brings true peace and contentment, something far more valuable than any earthly treasure.
Right. Dr. Heim points out that money can buy you a house, but it can't buy you a home.
Right.
It's wisdom that transforms those material things into something truly meaningful.
Well, exactly. And this passage goes even further, stating that the Lord, by wisdom, founded the earth. By understanding, he established the heavens.
Wow.
So wisdom isn't just some abstract concept. It's the very foundation of creation itself.
Wow, that puts things into a whole new perspective.
It does.
It makes you realize just how essential wisdom is for living a truly fulfilling life. But, you know, thinking about wisdom as this powerful, almost divine being, I wonder if it ever feels intimidating. Like, are we even worthy of approaching it?
That's an interesting question. And it makes me think of Proverbs 5.59 and 11.13. Here, wisdom is portrayed as a woman who protects and guides her follower, almost like a mother figure.
You know, I always interpreted this passage as emphasizing wisdom's nurturing side.
Mm.
But Dr. Heim suggests that it's actually more like a husband-wife relationship, where wisdom takes the dominant role.
Okay.
He even points out that this role reversal was quite unusual in ancient Israelite society.
It's definitely a unique depiction. It challenges our assumptions about traditional gender roles and power dynamics. And it raises the question, what does it mean for wisdom to be the protector in this relationship?
It seems to suggest that true wisdom empowers us, shields us from harm, and guides us on the right path. It's not about being passive or submissive, but actively seeking wisdom's guidance and allowing it to shape our lives.
I love that insight. And this passage also emphasizes the danger of rejecting wisdom,
right,
warning against the consequences of straying from her path. It highlights the importance of remaining faithful to her teachings.
It's a powerful reminder that true wisdom requires commitment and loyalty. It's not a casual fling.
Right.
It's a lifelong pursuit, a relationship that demands our full attention and devotion. But, you know, all this talk about acquiring wisdom, about this deep, intimate relationship, makes me wonder about its origins. Where does this wisdom even come from?
Well, that brings us to one of the most debated and misunderstood passages in Proverbs chapter 8, verses 22 to 31.
Okay.
This is where things get really interesting, because it talks about wisdom being begotten by God even before creation.
Right. And we briefly touched on how this has sparked a lot of discussion about the connection between personified wisdom and Jesus in the New Testament.
Yeah.
But before we get into that, I think we need to unpack what begotten even means in this context.
Absolutely.
It's not exactly a word we use every day.
It's a crucial concept to understand if we want to grasp the significance of this passage. And that's exactly where we'll pick things up in the final part of our deep dive.
Okay, so we're finally tackling this Proverbs 8.22.31. The passage that sparks so much debate about wisdom's origins and its possible connection to Jesus.
Yeah.
But I think before we get ahead of ourselves, we need to, like, figure out what begotten even means in this context.
You're absolutely right. It's not a word we throw around casually, and it carries some heavy theological baggage. Dr. Heim really digs into the nuances of this passage, dissecting the specific Hebrew verb used, kana. And here's where it gets interesting. Kana can mean to acquire or to possess, but it can also mean to create or to beget.
So it's not just about acquiring wisdom like you'd buy a new car.
Right.
It's hinting at something much deeper.
Yeah.
You know, a relationship that goes beyond simple possession.
Exactly. And that opens up a whole world of interpretation.
Yeah.
Is wisdom something God acquired, like a precious treasure that he discovered?
Mm-hmm.
Or was wisdom created, brought it into being by God?
And if wisdom is begotten, does that imply a kind of father-child relationship?
Yeah.
It's starting to feel like we're wading into some pretty deep theological waters here.
We are. And Dr. Heim doesn't shy away from the complexity. He points out that the word reshit, meaning beginning or first, is used both in Proverbs 8.22, where it describes wisdom's origin, and D, in Proverbs 4.7, where it emphasizes the importance of acquiring wisdom.
So there's this deliberate parallel being drawn between the beginning of wisdom itself and the beginning of our pursuit of wisdom.
Right.
Like, those two ideas are somehow linked?
Precisely. And Dr. Heim argues that this connection between Proverbs 8.22 and Proverbs 4.7 strengthens the idea that the verb kana in both faces should be understood in the context of a husband-wife relationship.
So it's not just about acquiring wisdom as a possession. It's about entering into this deep, intimate union with wisdom.
Right.
Okay. That makes the whole idea of begotten even more intriguing, doesn't it?
It really does. And, you know, this idea of a pre-existent divine being closely connected to God, but also somehow distinct, resonated with early Christians as they were trying to understand the mystery of Jesus.
Mm.
Dr. Haim suggests that these Jewish writings about wisdom could have provided a framework for expressing the doctrine of the Trinity.
That's a pretty bold claim. Is he saying that Proverbs 8.2231 directly influenced how early Christians thought about Jesus?
He's careful not to make that direct link. He acknowledges that there's no explicit citation of this passage in the New Testament, but he does suggest that the idea of a pre-existent being who embodies God's wisdom and acts as a mediator between God and humanity, well, that idea might have resonated with early Christians as they grappled with who Jesus was.
It's like a seed that was planted in the Old Testament and blossomed in a new and unexpected way in the New Testament. So after all this, what does it all mean for us today? How can we apply these insights about personified wisdom to our own lives?
I think one of the key takeaways is that wisdom isn't just about accumulating knowledge. It's about cultivating a relationship with something greater than ourselves. It's about pursuing truth, understanding, and insight with passion and dedication.
And it's about recognizing the power of metaphors in shaping how we think and experience the world. Who knew that a deep dive into Proverbs could lead to such profound insights?
Yeah, it's amazing what we can uncover when we really take the time to dig deep, isn't it? And I think this conversation has raised some fascinating questions for us to keep pondering. If wisdom is personified as a woman, what does that say about the feminine aspects of God? How might this challenge our traditional understanding of the divine?
That's something I'll definitely be thinking about. And for our listeners, as you continue your own journey of discovery, remember that wisdom isn't something you just find. It's something you cultivate, something you pursue with your whole heart.